Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, July 31st, 2005, show number 21, brought to you from Washington, D.C. Hello, this is Phil McKinney, and welcome to this week's Killer Innovations Podcast. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. I'm in Washington, D.C. this week, but I'm heading back out on the road. My travel is starting to ramp up again, so I'll be heading out this week. First stop is New York City. Apologize for the extra download some of you experienced last week. We were putting a fix in place for Apple iTunes 4.9, and as a result, some of the Podcatcher software downloaded last week's show twice. This should be a one-time event now that the fix is in place for iTunes. Thanks for all the comments that have come in. I really do appreciate the exchange, the emails. Number of you have reached out to me on Skype. Great to have those conversations. I would encourage the rest of the listeners to participate. This is, albeit you may think this is a passive experience of sitting here listening to the podcast, but this is one of those podcasts where active participation is encouraged. So please keep the feedback coming in. Suggestions are great. We had some great suggestions come in over the last couple of shows with regards to the ID3 tags that are now put into the podcast to make it easier for you to search and find a specific topic within the podcast. And also participation about the topics and information that's being shared. So please continue to send those emails in. Also, please join in on the conversation on the Killer Innovation community site. If you're not familiar with it, you can go to killerinnovations.com and click on the Killer Innovation community button. It'll say KI community. It's on the right-hand side of the screen. I noticed that a lot of you are logging in and looking at what's being posted. Just a few or a handful of you are actually participating. Now it's the time to join in. Participate. That's the key here, we will all benefit from everybody's input and everybody's ideas and everybody's lessons learned around this whole area of creativity and innovation. So please continue to send the feedback. You can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com, or you can call the feedback line at 1-703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at Phil_McKinney. Also, all of this contact information is on the KillerInnovations.com website. It's in the upper right-hand corner. You have the feedback line, the email addresses, and the Skype address. So if you don't need to try to remember that, just go to killerinnovations.com. This week's segment one. Over the last couple of podcasts, I've kind of mentioned it a couple times around the whole concept of open source or open source innovation. And this last week, I was really starting to dig into kind of, you know, if I had to put together my own definition or my own characteristics of open innovation, and there are some books that are out. In fact, Henry Chesbrough has put out a book called Open Innovation, and he's put forward his ideas. But I think some of those are maybe a little constraining. I was trying to figure out a definition of a much broader concept behind open innovation. And what really caught my eye when I was doing this research over the last couple weeks is an interesting area of what I would call emergent innovation. And emergent innovation is what I would kind of call the accidental outcome versus forcing or defining a process to create innovation. And so This week, segment one, we're going to talk about, or I'm going to share with you what I found interesting around this whole concept of emergent innovation and where I think it might lead us from the standpoint of thinking a little bit differently about innovation, structure innovation processes and methodologies and tools and those kinds of things. So when I talk about emergent innovation, what is it that I mean? What I'm talking about here is innovation that is self-forming, meaning that it just kind of emerges. It comes literally up out of the ground from the standpoint of not having been defined by a structured process. It also has the characteristics of being without clear direction, control, hierarchy. There isn't a CEO that's over this thing. And the other thing is that it serves a market or society need. It's not a hobby, it's not a social club, but this is something that's actually serving a market or a need in society. And when I was going through this research, I kind of derived out what I would call basic characteristics of emergent innovation. And in order for emergent innovation to kind of form, here are some of the things that have to exist in one form or another. One, you need to have a culture of experimentation or a culture of risk-taking. There needs to be some kind of self-organizing knowledge systems, the ability to pass information back and forth. You know, in today's terms, we would think of those as being kind of what we would call wikis or blogs, communities, where people like-minded can come and share. Third is strong network of relationships, meaning there needs to be this kind of community of people that can be involved. It can be both an internal community, meaning inside of an organization, or inside of geography, such as inside of a country, or inside of series of communities from the standpoint of actual towns and cities, or they can be external, meaning they're far-reaching. You need to have multiple skills represented. It isn't that everybody, for instance, is a software developer, everybody, you know, is a physician, or everybody is a school teacher. You need to have a variety of skills that are part of this community. It needs to have flexible team structures, meaning it's not a formalized, set of teams based on hierarchies. And then the most important thing, as far as a characteristic that I believe needs to be there when you talk about emergent innovations, are simple rules. And what I mean by simple rules are minimum specification, meaning there isn't a big process of defining a document that somebody else goes off and does. There needs to be a diffusion of authority, meaning there doesn't need to be a hierarchy with one person in control and kind of this command and control structure. It needs to have a diffusion of authority, and the authority defines what they do by these very simple sets of rules. And then third is widespread availability of information. True transparency of information. So this isn't you know, certain levels within an organization control and command and hide information or only share certain pieces of information. But when you think about emergent innovations, then you really see where it is this widespread of information. It's purely open, it has this transparency. And then lastly, it's what I would call the minimization of boundaries. Meaning there aren't these organizational boundaries either by culture, societal, or by you know, by any boundaries that you can define. So again, you know, the characteristics, you know, that I'm seeing as far as this emergent innovation is you need to have a culture of experimentation, risk-taking. Two, you need to have some kind of self-organizing knowledge systems. Three, you need to have some kind of a strong network of relationships. Four, you need to have multiple skills represented. You need to have diversity of skills. We've talked about diversity in the past. but diversity of skills represented. Fifth, you need to have flexible team structures, meaning it's not defined by who reports to who, but that teams are self-organizing. Six, and I think this is probably one of the most important, very simple rules. And these rules define all of the decision-making process, and therefore everybody in the organization can know that what they're doing is the right thing because it maps against these very simple sets of rules. And then lastly, the minimization of boundaries. So what are some examples of emergent innovation? Now, one that I came across, oh, this has got to be a couple of months ago in some articles, which is kind of what's been percolating in the back of my mind about this whole thing of this emergent innovation. This example is actually based in India, and it's a service that has basically emerged in India whereby workers who live in one part of town who take trains to go to work or whatever, like to have home-cooked meals at lunch. One, it's a cost savings issue because they can have the food that they prepare rather than going out and potentially having to pay for much more expensive food. And two, it's just the cultural issue of eating the food that's prepared for them by their wives, their sisters, whatever the case might be. Now in India, and I'm going to get this wrong, so if I pronounce this wrong, I apologize to you, but in India, this goes by really two words, dibwala and tiffinwala. And tiffin is I've derived from reading a series of articles really define these pots. And what happens is that in the home, the wife or sister or the worker in the home prepares the lunch and puts it into these pots. In your local community, then, basically, it's almost like a messenger service. They come around and they pick up all these pots. They take them to the train station. The train transports them into the city center. And as the train travels on, these pots are then resorted. And when they arrive at these stations, these pots are offloaded to other local messengers or whatever the case might be. And then they are taken and actually delivered to the right building and to the right floor, and you literally have your home-cooked meal from your house delivered to you at your desk. Now in Mumbai, there's about 4,000 people who are, who provide this service. These are people that are kind of this emerging network that has been built up. Now this network is not something that's just come up in the last few years. It's actually been in existence for over 120 years. So this isn't something that's just a modern activity. It's been around for a significant amount of time. Now the interesting thing is that many of the people that work in delivering and providing this kind of service are illiterate. So how do they get the pots from your home to the office, to the right person at the right floor, such that that gets there on time and it gets to the right person? Well, there's a very simple coding system that, again, has emerged out of this that has become consistent across all these people who are providing this capability. And this coding system has proven to be, one, extremely simple, two, it can be used by people who are illiterate. Because the people who are providing this service in India are illiterate. And this has proved to be so simple and so elegant that they've only had 100 complaints in 120 years. Now, think about that. 100 complaints in 120 years. And when you work out this network just in Mumbai, that works out to one complaint for every 158 million deliveries. One complaint for every 158 deliveries. Amazing. A second example of what I would call emergent innovation is here in the Washington, D.C. area. And this is with what we call slug lines. Now, it's not a great name, but it's emerged as really a solving of a problem here in the Washington, D.C. area. And that is the issue of traffic and commuting. So, what are slug lines? Well, here in Washington, D.C., we have what we call HOV, or high occupancy vehicle lanes. If you drive a car and you have two or more people in your car, then you can drive in these lanes and then therefore bypass all the traffic. And so what's emerged is these lines of people that in the morning are out in the suburb areas, the towns and communities that are outside of Washington, D.C. People who are driving in, who maybe they're by themselves in the vehicle, they literally get off the highway, they pull into these areas. It's these long lines of people. You can declare where you're going. Am I going to the US Pentagon? Am I going to downtown? People hop into your car. You don't even know who they are. They hop into your car. You take off. You can bypass all of the traffic congestion. You can ride in these special lanes. So the person who owns the car can therefore get to work much faster. The people who hopped into the car basically get a free ride. They don't have to pay for gas or any of that. And they can get into work. And so therefore it serves, two needs. People who are looking for a low-cost alternative to commuting, and the people who are wanting to drive into work but don't want to be stuck in traffic. Now, these slug line locations have basically just emerged. One of the largest slug line areas is just outside the Pentagon. Now, after 9/11, when the Pentagon was bombed, the slug line area was actually a cordoned off area around the Pentagon. You couldn't get there. It literally only took about one day for the slug line to basically identify a new location and to reemerge. Again, it wasn't a situation where this is run by a company where somebody stands up and says, I'm in control and I'll define it. It's basically this self-emerging, self-organizing approach to innovating and solving of problems, and in this case, solving the transportation, traffic congestion problems here in the Washington, D.C. area. Now, what does this all show? In my belief, it's really proving out that emergent innovations, are there. We may not notice them right away. We may have to search for them. But it also proves out that forcing innovation, meaning you having a very forced methodology, may not always be the best approach. Now, the question is can emergent innovations occur within the corporate world, or is it always driven by society needs? I believe it can exist, and I believe it does exist in the corporate world. One example that I've seen a lot of is basically in the area of business processes. How many business processes have you seen that have kind of emerged without anybody designing them? Now, in many cases, this is not a good thing because people can't even remember how the process got formed. And some processes get locked in as kind of quote corporate rules when in reality they just came out of an emergent behavior. So, how do you encourage then an emergent process within your environment or even within your organization? Well, first off, is minimize the unnecessary rules. Leave enough flexibility, enough gap in the rules to make things happen. Two is reduce or eliminate boundaries, whether those boundaries are real or artificial. People in their mind may think that there's a boundary, we can only operate in this space. You need to get people thinking that they can have impact and influence way beyond where they see their boundaries at. And then third is to identify and remove other barriers that are hampering this process. Now, this is a change for many people in management. Rather than being the ringleader, basically you need to become the blocker for the organization. You need to block things out of the way. You need to be kind of that, on the football field, the guy out in front. Your employees are carrying the football, they're trying to have impact. You need to clear the path. And that's a change for those of us in a management role. You don't always need to be the ringleader. You don't need to be the one in there kind of telling people what to do and being the one with all of the ideas. Sometimes you just need to be out there blocking for your organization so that they can do what they can do naturally. The other thing is I would encourage you to search out emergent innovations. I just gave you two examples that I've got, and I'll actually include a URL to this example of in India and the food processes so that you kind of get a feel. But search out emergent innovations. You may not even be aware of them. But for instance, if you look at them outside of your organizations, you could use them as to identify or as a weak signal. So think about it. 120 years this has been going on in India. Had you been able to identify that even 50 years ago in India, wouldn't that be the weak signal talking about food delivery? Being food delivery to your office, food delivery to your home. And 50 years ago, that didn't exist, but it's been going on for 120 years in India. Good example of searching out areas that potentially could give you ideas of new processes or even entirely new businesses that you can get into. Moving on to segment two, weak signals. And this week, I want to talk about the use of statistics to search for patterns that could be an indicator of weak signals. This week I was going through one of my idea notebooks. Now, in my case, I have notebooks going back almost 30 years. Drives my wife absolutely bonkers from the standpoint of having these notebooks with big, large rubber bands and big crates. I've moved them all over the world with me, and I think if the house was ever catching on fire, it'd be probably after my wife and kids. It would be the next things that I would want to jump in and grab. And so I was going through one of my idea notebooks and came across a set of stats about jobs and employment that I had collected a few months back. You might find them interesting. By 2010, 80% of the labor force will be working for firms employing fewer than 200 people. The same time, span of control will grow from six, meaning a manager will be managing six people, to a manager will be managing up to 21. And basically, this is a perfect example of the elimination of middle management that is going on. Promotions will be limited. In 1987, one in 20 employees got a promotion. By 2008, it's going to be one in 50 will get a promotion. Population of the developed nations will fall from 23% of the world population in 1950 to 14% of the world population by 2050. In 10 years, the workforce in Japan and much of Europe will shrink 1% per year. And by 2030, it will contract by 1.5% annually. So a shrinking workforce in Japan and much of Europe. U.S. households with dual income, both adults in the house working, will grow from 63% in 1992 to more than 75% by 2007. The richest portion, the top 25% of the US population, is at a zero population growth. Now, the key here is, the statistics are interesting, but what I'm going to talk about is how do you use these to identify patterns for weak signals? In this case, these were stats that were taken from multiple sources. I'm not a big fan of just reading one set of analyst reports and then using one analyst report to try to drive your strategy. You need to have a wide base of data sources, a wide set of statistics. The key, though, is how do you group them? In this case, these statistics were grouped around a specific topic or what I would call axes. In this case, one axis being population, the other axis being employment. So, these stats that I just went through, what are some of the weak signals that they are revealing? Well, one right away that's pretty easy is the shift towards non-developed countries as a growing source of workers. What I refer to as BRIC, and you've heard me talk about it in some of the early podcasts, BRIC being Brazil, Russia, India, and China as being the new area of high growth in population, high growth in skilled workforce, and really being a source of workers. That the rest of the world needs in order to satisfy the customer demands. Now, this is already emerging, so I wouldn't call this really a weak signal. But you can use this kind of information as validation that the trend, in this case, non-developed countries as a growing source of workers, has legs, meaning it's going to continue going on for some period of time. Well, what about some real weak signals? Well, one is that I've come up with, and again, this is just off the top of my head. You probably, listening to those statistics, have come up with three or four of your own. But one is the recognition that the employment model of the past is going away. So what does that mean for workers who are late in their career? So you're in the 50-year-old plus category. You're in middle management, which means you're not going to get a promotion. It also means, that you're going to be managing a much larger set of people. So how do you make that transition? How do you make that transition if you're late in your career and you're seeing this big shift in the employment space? Is it training? Is it education? Companies that are, quote, trend friendly, meaning they're looking for those kinds of middle managers as sources for their employees. Who are those? How do you create companies that I would call trend friendly around this shift in the employment space? Well, what about middle management? They aren't getting promoted, their span of control is growing. What tools can you build for middle management so that they can go from effectively managing six people to effectively managing 20 plus people? What are the tools that those people need in order to make sure that they are effective in managing that large of an organization? Again, these are just some random thoughts on my part, but what I want to leave you with is one question. What do you see as a weak signal opportunity that you can capitalize on? Okay, going on to segment three, killer question of the week. This week's question ties nicely with the whole concept of emergent innovations and the processes that we can inadvertently put in place that create the barriers. Remember, we talked about part of management's job in a kind of an emergent innovation culture is to get out of the way and act as a blocker, reduce the barriers. And sometimes, though, we put processes in place that actually create barriers. So this week's question is focused on process innovation, and the question is, am I designing the core processes to accommodate the exceptions? Am I designing the core processes to accommodate the exceptions? But keep in mind that we tend to over-design the processes. We tend to try to plan for every contingency. Back in the, mid to late 90s when business process reengineering was the buzzword of the day. And those activities and those projects would detail out new processes, and they would basically design them right down to cover every possible contingency that they had in place. The problem is that those processes do not leave enough room for you to accommodate other things that are going to come up that you couldn't plan for. So, do you leave enough freedom to accommodate things like unique requests from a customer? Yeah, I like your product, but can you do X? Our processes don't support that. Sorry, we can't do that. That's the wrong answer. Do you have enough freedom in your processes to accommodate, again, unique requests from a customer, that wacko idea from one of your team members, even an unforeseen market opportunity? Can you respond quickly? The objective is to have processes that give you the agility and flexibility to respond without the need to completely redesign or replace your processes. If your processes are so well defined and so ingrained with your employees that when you do have to adjust it, it is extremely disruptive to your employees. They know how to do X, they've been told to do X a certain way, and therefore, by building freedom into the processes, by simplifying these rules, you give the flexibility to your employees to respond, to find that better way to do it. If you don't define it all the way to the bottom end and let the employees, in some cases, actually fill in the gaps with their knowledge and with some very simple rules and some guidelines, you'll see some emergent innovation come out of that organization. So again, the killer question of the week, am I designing the core processes to accommodate the exceptions? And with that, thanks for listening. Please keep the feedback coming. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. The feedback line 1-703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. Now this week I'm actually going to assign you homework. So this week's assignment is send me an email that describes how you've applied information from the podcasts. So this is not just this specific podcast, but the ones in the past. I'm interested in hearing how you've applied the information, either for your personal career, your business, a charity organization you support, whatever it is, and what results you saw from it. I'll summarize and share the emails in an upcoming podcast, and I'm interested in learning also. I mean, clearly I don't have all the answers, and hopefully the information is useful, but I'm also interested in learning from you. So how do you apply it? How do you take what I'm sharing here in this podcast, how are you applying it in your career, your business, charity organizations you're involved with, and what impact has it had? Also, don't forget, we are now at the start of a new month. So all of your votes for July have been wiped out and you need to re-vote for your favorite podcasts. So visit Podcast Alley to provide feedback on your favorite podcast. The votes on this site are the easiest way for you to say thanks for the time and effort that goes into researching and producing your favorite podcasts. Also, please join in on the conversation about creativity, innovation, ideas, and weak signals by visiting the killerinnovations.com website and clicking on the KI Community button. It's up on the upper right-hand side. Just to let you know, Killer Innovations Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Visit techpodcast.com to discover the best in the technology podcast. There's some great podcasts out there on Tech Podcast, and I would encourage you to go visit. And with that, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.